deep down inside, I still knew that even though I felt worthless, my life was still worth something, right? So I knew that deep down inside, I still had that, and the promise I made to myself. I didn't forget about that promise.
It's easy to talk about the successes, but what doesn't get talked about enough is the struggle. My name is Eric Weinmayer. I've gotten the chance to ascend Mount Everest, to climb the tallest mountain in every continent, to kayak the Grand Canyon, and I happen to be blind. It's been a struggle to live what I call a no barriers life, to define it, to push the parameters of what it means. And part of the equation is diving into the learning process and trying to illuminate the universal elements that exist along the way. In that unexplored terrain, between those dark places we find ourselves in and the summit, exists a map. That map, that way forward, is what we call no barriers.
Today we meet Gabriel Cordell, who is the first person to roll across the United States in a standard manual wheelchair, a 3,100-mile journey from the Pacific to the Atlantic. Gabriel is also a professional actor with credits that include CSI, Dexter, and Numbers, as well as national ads for IBM, Maxwell House, and Pizza Hut. As a motivational speaker, Gabriel Cordell gets to share his inspiring story of turning tragedy into triumph.
So Gabriel, it's really cool. We are here in Lake Tahoe in Squaw Valley at the beginning of our No Barrier Summit. So it's really awesome. We're psyched you're going to speak to our whole community tomorrow night, and everyone's just totally excited about that.
Honored.
And it's a beautiful place, beautiful temperature outside. There's tons of snow in the mountains, I understand, right? Isn't it like all white above us?
It's all white. There's actually skiing still available here, even though we're in mid-June,
yes.
Which is pretty crazy. And for those listeners who don't know what the No Barriers Summit is, you should check out nobarrierssummit.org. But it's this four-day amazing experience of speakers and performers and hundreds of activities that you can choose from, try something you've never tried before. We challenge people to come here and break through the barriers they're facing in their life and to celebrate what's possible, despite the fact that most of the people who are in attendance are facing major challenges. And so it's a kind of a moment in time where you can think about all that is possible despite the things that we're suffering through and struggling with.
Yeah, and it sort of parallels our podcast because it sort of tries to break through cliche and try to get in and dissect what this no barriers life looks like for people and how people build the tools and the mindset to break through all those barriers. So same reason we started the podcast, to really try to go deep. So Gabriel Cordell, we are totally psyched to have you here. So first of all, for everybody, you push your wheelchair, crank your wheelchair across the USA, like over 3,000 miles, specific to Atlantic, right?
Yes, sir.
And first standard wheelchair, you know, to go all the way across, and human being in the wheelchair to go across the country.
Okay.
That's pretty, you kind of understated about that.
<It's> certainly epic, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Roll With Me, just to fill in the gaps there, Roll With Me is the film that chronicles your journey and the
right.
experience and tells the story.
Yes, it was quite a journey. And, you know, that journey took me 25 years to figure out. And the journey didn't start at me being in a wheelchair.
Right.
You know, life happens. And ironically, I got into my accident going to my first professional audition. So 25 years later, here I am sitting in this room.
Focus on the adventure, just of like, you know, the rolling adventure.
Right.
You had like six people
yes.
following you. And
yes.
these sounded like some crazy folks.
We were the Bad News Bears of film crew,
hey,
of any crew.
Like, spell out some of these characters.
Okay, so.
When I read this, this is...
Right,
I was belly laughing.
So we had me, okay, which was as flawed of a human being as you can possibly get. Then you had, let's start with the director, who was an unemployed gay lesbian. We had a Marine who had PTSD, who was homeless. We had two drug addicts. One was not even 24 hours sober. We had one that had self-diagnosed with Asperger's. Another one was an Army vet. It was like the who's who of no one. But I got to tell you, the heart, the commitment, the dedication to do this was unrelenting. But it was, without a doubt, the most difficult part of the journey.
How did you assemble it?
Where did these folks come from?
Yeah. How do I collect them? So your qualifications, all four limbs have to work, and you have to have a heartbeat. And seriously, those were the qualifications, because not too many people are just going to take off 4 months out of their lives with no pay going across the United States at the pace of sleep. So whoever said yes, pretty much.
So did you put like a Facebook ad out or something?
I posted ads on Craigslist. I posted ads in Starbucks. I posted just everywhere I can possibly think of. No Facebook, nothing. Not at all. Just Craigslist.
So this ragtag group of people, they sign up. And do you accept everyone or did you have to vet people? Like, you're not crazy enough. Maybe you have to stay behind.
actually, every person that said yes came on. Was able to come on. Except the one with the Asperger's. I was having real problems with him before we left. Like, I'm talking about fisticuffs, right? We were about to get into but the dedication and his work ethic was just undeniable. And I figured, I'm not going to be with him too much because I'm going to be out on the road rolling and he's going to be in the RV. But, you know, it came to the point where I had to tell him, you cannot come. And then I felt so bad because he committed so much up to that point to help us. He was actually the first person on my crew, the first person. And so we brought him along.
And was he like a really big challenge during the trip?
Well, put it this way, we had to have a team meeting before we got out of California because everyone was ready to quit because of him.
Oh, wow.
Literally, everyone was ready to kill him, like physically assault him, and they were ready to leave. And we weren't even out of California.
So what's it like trying to manage that kind of team? It's like you like set yourself up for extra emotional challenge.
Right. Well, listen, I don't know. I didn't know what I was getting myself into. I just knew that I was good with managing people and personalities. I'm very fair. And so I honestly didn't know. I knew from a professional filming standpoint that we were way lower than the bar. but, you know, personally, some of them I met the night before, you know? Some of them I met a week before, so I didn't know anyone. The only one I knew was my nephew, and he was a mess.
Yeah, we'll talk about that because that's really interesting. But these people, was it that you didn't want to be kind of lonely just cruising across the country by yourself? Or did you think it would be better for the story? Or you just sort of intuitively said, like, this might be interesting?
Well, it would be hard for me to go alone because just my catheters alone, I would need a car, you know, a trunk full, just my catheters. So there's no way I could have done it alone.
Got it. So you needed a support team.
I needed a support team, 100%.
Take us through, for our listeners who don't spend their lives, any portion of their lives in a wheelchair. Obviously, it seems just like an epic idea to roll across America. But on a day-to-day basis, what makes it so tough? Aside from the team, just the physical feat of it seems phenomenal to me. Talk us through, for someone who doesn't know what that is, what's going on a day-to-day basis?
It's 70,000 feet of elevation.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Okay, well, here's what I can tell you, right? And I know it's going to sound weird, but the rolling was not a problem. And I tell you this because I trained like an animal. I was a machine. Before I left, I already rolled 1,000 miles, just in training, 1,000 miles. And 400 of those miles were probably just uphill at like a 15 to 20% grade. So the rolling, it wasn't difficult until we got to New Mexico, Deming, New Mexico. That's when I felt my first real pain. But for those 2 days, but otherwise, I swear, if I tell you that the rolling was not a problem. Now, listen, rolling in the heat in 100 degrees, rolling in the freezing cold at like 2 a.m. in the middle of the desert where there's no one around for days, rolling in the pouring rain, those were challenging. But the actual rolling itself, I loved it because me with nature, you know, and the people that we met along the way and just, listen, I saw America going 5 miles an hour. I saw every crevice on the road, you know, so I took it in. I knew what I was doing. And so, you know, I had enough negativity with the crew that I didn't let, you know, the rolling. And the rolling was awesome. It was awesome.
That sounds almost like the time of peace.
It was.
On the trip.
It was. It was my sanctuary. There was a point where, so when we first started, we were averaging 40 miles a day, right? So we rolled anywhere from 10 to 14 hours.
So hot.
Yes, right. And so we broke it up. First shift was 20 miles, and then I would rest for a couple of hours, and then I would go do my next 20-mile shift. And we did that for the first couple of weeks, but it was taking its toll on me. And so then we decided, okay, no more breaks. We're just going to start and then roll. And then if I got to relax and take a break for 30 minutes and then continue to roll, and then we'll go back to the RV when we're done. You know, and sometimes, you know, I just say, come on, I just want to go roll. Let's go. You know, and I just get the itch to go and roll. And sometimes it's like, guys, I can't do 30 today. I just can't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, fast, like, it just seems like the rolling was your zen, your moment of peace, and the team that supported you was the part that, you know, struggled at times. But take us for our listeners who are just learning about this, you know, what sparked this crazy idea to begin with?
Well, so I'm going to be a little corny right now, all right?
Corn it up.
Okay. When I was 18 years old, right, I made a promise to myself that by the time I turn 45, I'm going to do something extraordinary. Like, I was dead set on it. And I always had this feeling that I was different from my friends. Not disability different, right? Just I knew that I had something in me that I didn't feel from them, right? They're all successful and they have great lives, but I just knew my path was going to be different. And so I thought acting was going to be my calling, and it's going to set me up to have a platform to, I don't know, to inspire folks of the Middle Eastern ethnicity, right? Because that was before my accident. So that's what I was thinking. You know, I want to give power to the Arabic people because, you know, sometimes we get a raw deal.
And you were born in Tripoli.
I was.
Libya.
I was.
And your family made it over to America and settled in Long Island.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So that's why that issue is personal to you.
Right.
Right?
Right. Just the whole thing. And so, you know, that's what I wanted to do. And so I started living my dream, and my first audition, yes. And bam, I get into a car accident and I end up in a wheelchair.
A couple miles from your house.
A mile from my house.
Yeah.
You know, they say most accidents happen within like, what, 2 mile or mile radius from your house. And so that happened, and I was just like, what? This sucks. But I got to tell you, I was fortunate enough to have been allowed to stay in a pediatrics ward. That is the single most important event of my life, the single most important decision, single most important time of my life out of everything I've done, even the role, right? Because I got to live with children.
You were 22, right?
I was 22. I just turned 22.
Right.
And so I'm in this pediatrics ward, and I'm looking all around me, and it's just devastation. And just, like, this ain't nothing. And
that Why, quickly, you saw stories, like, a lot worse than what had happened
just,
to you?
I got 22 years of health and normalcy. I got 22 years to live it up and with no problems. And here I come into this hospital, and babies struggling, fighting for their lives, kids, you know, dismembered, and just every disability and illness you can think of. And I'm just like, holy, like I was blown away in the saddest but most inspiring way. And so I was like, okay, time to elevate, because these children changed my life. They changed my mindset, my perspective on how I see things. And now it's time for me to give what these kids gave me, give what I can give to the disabled community.
And you wound up, you're paralyzed from the chest down, right?
Yes, T6.
Yeah.
So pretty much 3/4 of my body.
Yeah.
But the most important factors I have left, you know, which was my arms and my cognitive skills. So I thought, okay, now my journey changed. Now I'm going to inspire people to pursue their goals, and mine is acting, so I'm going to be an actor in a wheelchair, right?
But did that shift happen, like, I want to be an actor right away? Or there must have been, like, it sounds like the seeing these kids changed your perspective, right? But did you snap forward like that pretty fast?
I snapped forward. Well, put it this way. 6 weeks after I was released from the hospital, I was back in New York City pursuing my acting career.
Wow.
In a wheelchair.
Yeah.
Just 6 weeks after I was released. I tell you, these kids, just they injected an attitude in me that will carry me for the rest of my life. I mean, they're the sole reason why life is good. Why life is good regardless of my circumstances. They are the sole reason. And of course, I've been inspired, you know, since then, but that was the pivotal point in my life. And acting, you know, I'd done, you know, guest starring roles, commercials, I did modeling, you know, I had moderate success. And then I got a little break where I got a recurring role on a TV show called Dexter.
Yep.
But at the same time is when I started dabbling in the bad stuff.
You got into drugs, didn't you?
I did.
Yeah.
Like big time.
Big time.
Big time. And so one day I was getting ready to go on set, and I decided, let me go make a pit stop at my dealer's. And I went and picked up, and I got high before I went on set. Next day they called my agent and said, we will no longer be using his services. Mm. And that just put me in a downward spiral. And I put acting on the back burner, and sex, drugs, and gambling became my life for the next 5 years. That's all I did.
If you don't mind me asking, like, what kind of drugs were you?
I started with cocaine, and then I graduated to crystal meth.
Yeah.
You know, pills, drinking. I don't like to throw marijuana in there because that's just like the,
right,
you know, the good friend that gets the bad rap.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, I got heavy. Like, that was my life every day for 5 years.
Were you surrounded by that in the acting community? Is
no.
that how you got exposed to it?
I was solo. I was a loner. No one knew. I lived with my parents. I got my girlfriend of 9.5 years broke up with me. And I got rid of my apartment, put all my stuff in storage, bought a mattress, and went and lived in my parents' 550 square foot non-accessible apartment.
Wow.
On the mattress for 5 years. They had no idea of my lifestyle. They had no idea that I was doing coke and crystal meth every day.
Do you think that's good? Like, where do you pinpoint that? Is that like from maybe stuff you hadn't dealt with, like transitioning into a chair? Or do you think it goes deeper than that? Like, why,
yeah.
What's the why?
I know exactly why.
Yeah.
I know exactly why. So you know, what these kids, you know, being in a pediatrics ward, these kids inspired me and gave me the no attitude, no barriers, right? Without knowing no barriers, just gave me that mindset, the no barriers mindset. And 6 weeks after I got released, I was back in Manhattan pursuing my acting. So I focused on that. I didn't focus on my disability, on what happened to me. I didn't go through my emotional roller coaster, my ranges of emotions. And the one thing that I was a very sexual person. I was very sexual. And losing that, I got to be honest with you, that is more devastating than not feeling any other part of my body, more devastating than not walking, more devastating than pooping on myself, peeing on myself, having to ask people for help. But I never addressed it. And it all came to a head when I got into my first relationship, my real first serious relationship, and it was the sex part was just not happening. It just, we weren't meshing, we weren't clicking. And she would tell me, I feel disconnected from you. When I touch your lower body, it just feels dead. When I touch your upper body, there's a lot of energy, and we just couldn't get on the same page. And then once we broke up, I started dabbling, right? I was already dabbling before we broke up, but when we broke up is when I started doing it every day. And then I realized I can get, it wasn't a sexual release physically, but mentally, I did some really shady stuff, right? How I dealt with it was I took my drugs and it put me in a state of mind where all my inhibitions, all my ethics and morals were gone.
Yeah.
And what I did was I became I describe it as a sexual predator. Mm. And my goal was to go around and try to find women who are wearing very revealing clothes. If they're bending down, I try to position myself where I can see down their pants. If they're bending forward, I try to look down their shirts. I go and I position myself next to an escalator. So when if they have dresses on, I can see up their dresses. I almost got to the point where I was going to have cameras put on my wheelchair and go into dressing rooms. That's what I started doing. I started invading personal space. Like I was this just bad. It was
just.
Do you
think like that's like that dysfunction? Like you said, you know, you have cravings, right? Like it doesn't go away, right? And then so, but how do you fulfill that, right? So that hole gets filled with this dysfunction that happens, right?
Right. Right. And that's what it was. It was, and for whatever
reason. You're trying to fill this thing.
Right. I'm trying to fill it. And I convinced myself that this replaces the physical sex, right? This replaces it. In my mind, I'm getting mentally stimulated, right? Because I can't get physically stimulated. I mean, I can up here, you know, my upper chest and stuff, but I can't get really physically stimulated. So mentally, it was working for me as bad as I was and as unethical and immoral as I was. It was working for me. And I was high, so I didn't care. Obviously, I'm living with my parents and I didn't care about them or what they thought. You think I'm going to care about a stranger? And that's what I did for 5 years. And I visited every mall, every outdoor mall, every Walmart, every Target, everywhere where I think there are women. Like I'd go and park in front of gyms and just park. I'm talking about binoculars. Like I was the voyeur of all peeping Toms and voyeurs.
I think that the story of, you know, just minutes ago, we were talking about this, you'd found this passion and what you wanted to do with your life and the way you were going to, you were with these kids who inspired you to have that passion. And I think a lot of folks in our community, one, I think a lot of folks struggle to find what they're passionate about, and you had some of that, but a lot of folks you're going on a course and all of a sudden you have some set of things happen and you lose that passion. So talk to me a little bit about in that time period, in those 5 years, are you still connected to that other part of you that existed before that part of your life started where you were like, I have a purpose and I have a passion and I need to get back in touch with it? Or is that just gone during that period?
Day to day, it was gone, right? Deep down inside, I still knew that even though I felt worthless, my life was still worth something, right? So I knew that deep down inside, I still had that, and the promise I made to myself. I didn't forget about that promise. I didn't forget, even though it was deep down in me, it was still there. And so I literally just dropped off the face of the earth. Like, I didn't talk to anyone. I didn't go out anywhere. I was literally MIA for 5 years. For 5 years, no one. Like, when people saw the film, especially people that knew me, like, their jaws dropped because they had no idea. But no, I didn't have it. Just it all just gone. I didn't have any motivation, any inspiration, nothing.
So you're owning this, and how do you get back, or how do you move forward?
Right.
Yeah, because you're like, sometimes those dysfunctions, it's just hard to get them under control, right? Because there's like, it's like this stuff deep in your brain, right, that you can't really, it's very hard to change.
It's so hard, especially when I found something, no matter how bad it was, I found something that gave me a little bit of pleasure. And to give that up, as bad as it was, and in the way I found it, and I kept at it, I knew that it's not me. It was a part of me, but it's not who I truly am, my essence. So one day, again, a normal day, I went and got my, and this at this point I was doing crystal meth. So I went and get the crystal meth, and I'm high. And my parents had a barbecue that evening, and I was still high. I didn't want to talk to anyone, and so I decided to be the grill master. Well, that was the stupidest decision, and probably, you know, subconsciously was probably the thing that got me clean. I was cooking the chicken, and before I realized it, my leg was stuck on the bottom of 600 degree barbecue. It was like stuck on there. And of course I can't feel. And so I rip my leg off, and it's just, my skin is like string cheese. Mm. And I have this big, it's probably the size of a small silver dollar pancake. And I drive myself to the intensive care unit at the burn center. And they said to me, this is bad. And I don't know if we're going to be able to save the leg. We may have to amputate. And so I was in intensive care in the burn unit for 1 week. They did 2 skin graft surgeries. They still weren't sure if they're going to save the leg because I don't have proper blood flow circulation. So they didn't think it was going to heal properly. And you would think that would have woke me up, right? And so a week, I get discharged. My brother picks me up from the hospital. I go home. And the first thing I do is I get into my car and I go to my dealers. And now remember, my leg is in a brace. I can't bend it. So it literally took me 20 minutes to get into my car because of the way I had to position my leg. I was literally, my legs were spread on the passenger side while I was driving. That's how bad I was. And then I realized, doing what I was high, I had this brace, my leg may be amputated. First time I felt disabled in my life. I never felt disabled in those 25 years before this happened. I never felt disabled, just didn't. But when I burned my leg, and I had my leg I had to deal with, my paralysis, I had 2 sores on my butt, open sores. I was a mess, and that's what got me out of it. And then I thought, I'm 42 years old. I have 3 more years to make good on my promise. I was running out of time, and I wanted to make something happen before my dad passed. And then I went and I remembered in 2011, 2 years before the role, again, I was high, and I just literally finished doing my line of coke. And I come outside, and I'm rolling through this parking lot, and a guy stops me, and he goes to me, excuse me, and I'm thinking to myself, dude, you're going to ruin my high. You're going to ruin my high. He goes, can I just get 1 minute? I'm like, yes. He goes, listen, my name is so-and-so. I'm inventing a new kind of wheelchair, and I want to pick your brain. I'll pay you for your time. And I thought, you're going to pay me? That's more money for drugs, right? That's all I thought about. And so the guy calls me. I go there. I sit with him an hour. He gives me $50. That's a gram of coke for $50. I was like, yeah, man, whenever you want to call me, buddy, call me. So there was a seed that was planted in that parking lot on that day. I didn't know about it, but the seed was planted. And then after 2 years later, he calls me and says to me, I built my chair. Come and check it out, the first prototype. I want you to ride it. I was like, all right. So I went and I checked it out and I rode his wheelchair. And it was more like a rowing kind of chair, right? It wasn't using your arms on the wheels. It was like a rowing, right?
Yeah, very cool.
And then my brain started going. And then I went home. You know, of course, there's more to the story, but just to, you know, to cut it short. And then I thought, I can give this guy the greatest campaign he could ever imagine. And I said to him, hey, what if I roll your wheelchair across California? You think anyone's ever rolled a wheelchair across California? And I'm thinking to myself, I went and do research. And I'm like, no one's ever rolled a wheelchair across California? What? This is crazy. And I'm doing more research. And he goes, really? Let me think about that. And then I go home and I'm just like, California's big and it's hilly. I'm like, has anyone ever rolled a wheelchair across America? And then I went and did research and I'm like, one guy's name pops up, two guys' name pops up, George Murray and Phil Carpenter. They rolled across America in a modified wheelchair in 1983. What? Like, I was blown away. And I thought to myself, has anyone else done this? And then I more Googling, a guy, Mike King, he pushed his wheelchair from Fairbanks, Alaska to Washington, D.C., wow, which was 5,000 miles.
Wow.
I was like, that's it. This is it. This is it. This is the extraordinary achievement that I've been searching for 25. This is it. Like, it started making sense. Everything started making sense. And I went and I told that guy, I said, forget California, dude. I'm going to roll across America in your wheelchair. And he goes to me, what? I'm like, I'm going to roll across America in your wheelchair. I'm like, you just have to pay for it. And he said to me, that's going to be expensive. I'm like, yeah, but that's going to be the greatest campaign you'll ever get, ever. And he goes, let me think about it. And then a couple of days he calls me, he goes, listen, dude, you're nuts. Okay, whether you're even going to do it or not, just the thought of thinking about it, you're nuts. He goes, I'll do California with you. I said, you know what, dude? No, I don't want to do California, because if I did California and I got scared, then I will never attempt America. So I don't even want to go there. I just want to just jump in. And he goes to me, I'm sorry, I can't. So I said, okay. So I stopped convincing him, but the idea stuck. And on June 30th, 2012, at 11:59 p.m., I had my last cigarette. I had my last line of coke, because it was coke that night. I had my last drink, everything. The next morning, I went cold turkey. I joined the YMCA, and 8 months later, I started on my roll.
Wow.
Huh.
Incredible.
And lingering a little bit more on the addiction part and the sexual stuff, you know, like, I don't know, in a weird way, like going blind, right? Like people kind of like, they forsake you, you know, like today it's just like a perfect example. I'm on an airplane and the person, I give them my ticket and they hand it back to my friend. You know, they don't hand it to me, right? And they're like, where's he sitting? You know, that kind of thing. I think when you go in a wheelchair, are there some similarities there where you start to feel like inadequate, like especially as a dude, you know, you're like looking up at people. Do you think there's some like ego and some stuff that gets mixed in there?
You know, I tell you, I've been fortunate enough. I always touted myself as the most accessible, inaccessible person you'll ever meet, because I never allowed anyone a moment to ever look at me as if I was disabled, right? And whether it's my energy or whether the words that were coming out of my mouth, of course I've had those, especially when you travel. But I think for the most part, I make myself feel more inadequate than anyone else, right? And I got to tell you, in the next 3 weeks, I'm going to be testing myself big time. Emotionally, I'm going to be putting myself in a very vulnerable situation. I'm going on vacation. How can that be vulnerable? But I'm going to an island. I'm going to the beach. I'm going to Jamaica. I have not gone anywhere like that since I've been in a wheelchair, because when you go to Jamaica with your significant other, it's about walking hand in hand in the beach. It's yeah. about, and you know, this is, unfortunately for me, I tried to stay away from things that made me feel inadequate. But, you know, for the most part, I don't allow people to treat me that way. Right. If someone did that to me, I would tell them, excuse me, you can hand it to me. Or, excuse me, you can talk to me. I'm down here, but you can still talk to me, kind of thing.
Yeah, but I think that's very relatable, like that idea of hand in hand walking on the beach. It's like my kid, he plays soccer. I'd love to be able to kick a soccer ball with him, but I avoid it because I can't do that, you know? Yeah. So yeah, you avoid those situations and you kind of fall into a little bit of safety sometimes.
You do, absolutely.
You stay out of those uncomfortable moments, right?
Absolutely.
So you got to find a different way to walk on the beach with your girl.
You know, or just saying, you know, there's a motivational speaker, and his name is W. Mitchell.
Yeah, I've heard of him.
You've heard him. So I was listening. He goes, you know, before my accident, there were 10,000 things I can do. After my accident, there are 9,000. Do I focus on the 1,000 that I can't or the 9,000 that I still can, right? And so for a long time, I was focusing on the 1,000, right? Even though I was pursuing my dreams, being an actor and doing this, but that was just surface. Mm-hmm. It wasn't penetrating. And this Jamaica trip that I'm taking, I'm going to Jamaica, but that's not what this trip is about for me. This trip is about being vulnerable, being courageous, in a way of letting all my guard down. And if I need help, and if I'm going to expose myself in a very unmanly,
vulnerable,
right? That's, you know, I'm willing to do that because my life's goal is to continue to grow, continue to elevate myself, and more than anything, be an inspiration to someone. But it's really hard. It's really hard. And you get it, Eric. You know, my girlfriend has two boys, 11 and 12 years old. When they're with their dad, they're all this play fighting and running and jumping, and we went to the beach and we went hiking and things like that. And, you know, things that I can't really do with them. And it's a hard thing to swallow. And I don't know if I'll ever get over that. You know, I don't know if I will ever get over that, which is fine. It doesn't mean that's going to confine me, right? But I don't think I'll ever have the emotion of, who cares? No, I do care. And it does suck. It does suck that I can't walk hand in hand with my girlfriend on the beach. And there's no, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It's, you know, just like it sucks being paralyzed. Now, is life great? Life is incredible, right? But it doesn't mean the situation doesn't suck, you know? And it has nothing to do with having a negative mindset. It's just, you know, call a spade, right? I don't know anyone who wants to be paralyzed, you know? And if they, you know, if you can go ahead and you know, that whole cliche of, if I had it all over to do again, would you choose the same path? I probably would wait 5 minutes longer before I left my house that morning.
Yeah. I mean, that's honesty. I like that. I really appreciate you saying that.
But it
because
has...
people say, like, going blind or being paralyzed was the greatest gift I've ever had.
Bullshit.
And it's just like, I don't know about that.
Bullshit. No, but what it taught me was how damn strong I am,
right,
and how resilient I am. That's what it taught me, and that I will never trade. But the actual experience of it sucks, you know?
So, you know, Eric talks about this moment when he got down from his Everest expedition, where his lead guide, PV was his name.
Yes.
This is the very day the expedition he's reached the summit,
yes,
turns to him and says, "Don't let Everest be the greatest thing you've ever done." Now that you have done this extraordinary thing and you've got this wonderful film that chronicles it, and that was the fuel to get you over a period in your life, yes, that was very dark, What's the new fuel? Does that fuel last? Is it, how do you continue to find that thing that drives you?
So I rolled America. I went to Israel. I rolled for peace there. I rolled across Long Island, and I had rolled over 5,000 miles, right? Within those 3 years. But it's not like actual, if you took it, it would have been like just over a total of a year, 5,000 miles, even though it extended into three, right? I thought my rolling, what am I going to do next? Because my body can't take it. Like, I'm in pain every day.
So you can't just go and like top that. You know what I mean? You can't go, oh, I'm just going to roll across the world now, right? Yeah, because your body.
If somebody said to me,
can't sustain it.
Let me tell you something, Eric. If someone came to me today and said, I will fund you, would you roll across the world? I would say yes.
Forget the pain. You do it anyway.
I would do it. Okay? I would do it. And so, okay, you know what? I'm just going to share this. And even though I'm going to talk about it tomorrow, I'm going to share it anyway.
Because this will come out after you speak.
Yeah, this will come out after you speak.
Okay.
Yeah. So don't worry about letting anything out.
Okay, so I was shot. My body was broken. And I didn't think I had any more rolling left. And then I had a two-year hiatus. And within those 2 years, again, it's about elevating yourself, right? In any way possible, right? Not just physical achievements, mentally, emotionally. So 2016, my dad gets sick, gets diagnosed with cancer, and I become his primary caretaker. Me, the guy in the wheelchair who brought him to all his chemotherapies, the guy in the wheelchair who's pushing my dad, who's in a wheelchair in the hospitals. Here I am pushing my dad in the hospital in a wheelchair. People are looking at me like, you need help? No, I don't need help, man. I got this. And that was this single most difficult thing I've ever been through in my life, was taking care for those 8 months. And it took a physical toll on me too, because of the stress and the emotion. Like, you hold a lot in, right? So it took a physical toll on me besides emotionally and mentally. Me and my girlfriend decided we're going to take in a foster kid. So we took in an adult, a teenage foster kid, and that was a challenge like no other, right? Talk about elevate.
How old was he?
When we got him, he was 19.
Wow. Yeah.
He was 19 and he was homeless. And he stayed with us for a year and a half. And I think I aged 10 years in that year and a half. It was trying, because the kid was collateral damage. And so I was like, okay, all this stuff is good, but I'm missing connecting with nature. I'm missing something, right? So my agent goes to me, hey, have you ever heard of a guy named Eric Weinmayer? And I reluctantly said, no, right? This was a year ago, last June. And I said, no, I did not. And then he started talking. I was like, all right, Mark, I need to get off the phone. I need to check this guy out. And I get off the phone. I go on YouTube, and I see you. And I'm just like, are you fucking kidding?
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Say it. You can
okay.
say it. No, okay. We're not, I mean, we're semi-family. But
okay.
That might be bleeped, you know. Fine.
Okay. Are you effing kidding me? And then I watched Farther Than the Eye Can See. And I was bawling. I could not believe what the hell I was watching. I could not believe. You shook me to my core. And the last time I was inspired was when I was in the pediatrics ward. That's how much you shook me to my core.
Yeah.
And I thought, I got to do something. I have to do something. There is no, I've done nothing. I've done nothing compared to this guy.
There's always more.
Right? And I thought, I need to climb my Everest.
Yeah, there's a bombshell coming here, Dave.
I know.
I'm feeling something.
I know.
I feel it.
It's coming.
This is like an announcement.
I know.
So I and I'm going to say this, right? I'm going to say this, and it's gonna go down in podcast, and so I can't go back. And so I thought, I need to climb a mountain. I need to climb a mountain. I need to climb the highest mountain I could possibly climb in North America. Well, I'm sorry, in the continental United States, because I hated traveling. Traveling is a pain for me. And so I started doing research, and Pikes Peak Mountain comes up, and Pikes Peak, the highest peak on the southern front range of the Rocky Mountains. It's a 14er. Yeah. Okay, I didn't know what that meant because I've never seen the Colorado Rockies, right? So I didn't know how big they are, but I knew they're big.
Yeah.
Right? And so I started doing research. Has anyone ever rolled a Pikes Peak Mountain? One guy came up, and his name is Dr. Glenn House.
Huh.
Dr. Glenn House rolled it. And I'm like, what kind of wheelchair did he use? He used a modified chair. He used a chair with Tailwind technology.
Huh.
Now, if anyone knows about wheelchairs with Tailwind technology, one push and you'll go for a long time.
Right.
Right? It's like having a little motor. And I thought, no one else has done this unassisted in a regular wheelchair? No. So I went and I thought, there's my Everest. And I teamed up with the Brain Injury Alliance of Colorado. And I was like, I'm going to roll up this mountain. Done. I'm doing it. I'm like, this freaking guy just summited Everest.
Well, it was almost 20 years ago.
It doesn't matter. But for me, it was that day. Uh-huh. For me, you did it last year. Because that's when I discovered it.
Yeah.
Right? And I thought, and I said, dude, this guy... And then he did the Grand Canyon, the Colorado? Uh-huh. And I'm like, I need to do something because I will die if I don't. I will underachieve. I will be a failure if I do not. And so he goes, okay. So I trained my ass off for 3 months. And this past September, I became the first person to summit Pikes Peak unassisted in my wheelchair.
This last wow. September.
Yeah, this last September.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah, it took me 9.5 hours.
Yeah.
And let me tell you something.
Put my fist out for a fist bump here.
Incredible.
For the podcasters.
And let me tell you something. It was solely because of you.
Huh. Well, that's good. We can inspire each other, right?
Solely because of you. But it didn't end there, Eric. So now... In my head, I'm like, this guy did all 7 summits, and he did the Colorado River. And I'm just like, I'll never live up to that. I just won't. But I can at least make my own path. And so I figured, let me roll up as high as I can, up America, which I did.
Yeah, yeah.
Now the third leg of what I believe is the trifecta for wheelchair endurance is let me roll in the most extreme conditions I possibly could.
Liking this.
Mm. So it was supposed to happen next month, but my body is not recouping the way it used to. I'm going to be 49 in September. So next year, on my 50th birthday, I pledge to you and to you and to you and to everyone listening that I am going... to attempt, whether I finish it or not, I am going to attempt to roll the Badwater 135 across Death Valley next July.
Good for you. Wow.
Which will be the hardest thing I've ever done in my life, harder than America.
Big time.
And if I do that, then I feel that I am worthy enough to be in the same sentence as Eric, if I do that. And the only reason I am doing that is because of what this man did to me and how he shook me to my core. No one holds a candle to him.
You're
no
really
one.
Making me squirm.
You know what? Good.
I'm a man of the 80s. You can't compliment me too much.
No. Because honestly, Eric, this is like, you have no idea. And then, on top of that, after I did Pikes Peak, which... Can I say something that's really bad?
Yeah.
I did it as a smoker.
Yeah. So you still smoking?
I'm trying to quit.
Yeah, to quit. Right?
I'm trying to quit. I mean, that's how bad I wanted it.
Yeah.
That's how bad I wanted it. And this can't happen in Death Valley because it just won't happen. But
the Death Valley thing is amazing. Now, I just like, there's this kind of catch 22, right? Because the decision to do it, is the cool thing. and the commitment to it, right? And the training and all that. And but if circumstances happen so that you do fall short, you're not a failure, right? You're not a failure. I know you want to drive yourself and you want to do this thing, right? So you kind of have to have this really driving attitude. But, you know, if a massive snowstorm comes in, right, and you fall a little bit short, you're not a failure. It's the decision and the commitment to do it. So I'm really psyched and proud of, you know, that you're making this kind of pledge.
Thank you. Listen, deep down inside, I know that I'm not a failure. If I never rolled another mile in my life, I know I've done things that most people could only dream about. I understand that. But I want to set a precedence.
You want to get it done.
I want to set a precedence, just like you set a precedence for blind people. I want to set the same precedence. And yes, it will not make me a failure if I do not make it. But it's going to hurt really, really bad because I got one shot at this. I can't. It's not the role itself that's difficult. It's the training. You know, like with me, I'm always rolling. I'm always using my arms. So even when I'm not training, I'm still doing something.
You're still training.
I'm still training. So it's nonstop for me. You know, it's not like a person who's an athlete who goes, trains, and then he goes home and he relaxes. There's no relaxing for me. It's just constant, constant, constant. And the fact that my body is healthy. Listen, I have a partially torn rotator cuff. I have major arthritis. I have now, I've developed scoliosis. I have my spinal cord from my lumbars. They're just shot.
None of this stuff is sustainable, is it?
It's not sustainable. So yeah. I need to figure out
what's next?
I'm going to continue to elevate, and more importantly than accomplishing these goals is the effect, is the response I get from people. That to me is what keeps me going. It's not the achievement itself, it's what I do to people, how people react to me. When I was doing climbing pikes, everyone was on their bicycles, and they're struggling, and people looking at me like, what? You're rolling up this mountain with your arms, dude? and I can't tell you how many people stopped me.
Gave them the fuel for moving their front.
I can't tell you how many people stopped me and said, I wanted to stop, but I'm looking at you, and there's no way I could stop now.
Well, you guys heard it here first, listeners. Yeah. The pledge.
The
No Barriers pledge has been taken on radio here on our podcast.
I can't believe I just did that.
I know. You announced it to the world, and I think for those
We've
listeners...
We've never had the big breaking news on our podcast. This is a first, right?
I know, right? Right? And I love that we're introducing this concept, which I think drives a lot of our community forward, which is make a commitment. And when you say it and you state it, whether you write it on your No Barriers flag, you state it to your friend, you state it to yourself, most importantly, you make that commitment and it propels you forward. It gives you hope and meaning and purpose. And that's what our No Barriers pledge is all about. We have kids that do it. We have vets that do it. We have people from all walks of life that make that commitment. And that commitment can be the fuel, whether you achieve it or not. It is the fuel that pushes you forward. And this idea that you, in the process, elevate yourself and elevate those around you is so powerful.
Maybe you'll carry a No Barriers flag with you when you do it.
100%.
Yeah. Woo. Okay, good.
100%.
Yeah, we need that.
Are you kidding me?
Gabriel, where can we, our listeners, learn more about you and follow your adventures? Is there somewhere
Roll
we can go?
Roll with me and all the good.
Well, follow me is going to be difficult because I'm terrible at social media. But I do have my Facebook page, Roll With Me USA. And then also my, I'm not even sure what my Instagram one is, but my Twitter is also Roll With Me. And my website, GabrielCordell.com, anything I have on, and I have it posted on there, 2020 Death Valley. It's on there too, but yeah, that's pretty much. And my Facebook, you know, Roll With Me USA.
Where can we watch Roll With Me? Is it possible
please,
for listeners?
Please, if you can. It's on Netflix.
Full.
Roll With Me. It'll be on there for another 2.5 years. Please watch it. Tell your family, tell your friends, tell your coworkers.
I've read a lot of really good reviews on it. So.
Oh, you have?
Yeah.
It took 6 years to make the film, to get the funding and, you know, just the right people that have the vision. And it's been a blessing. And that's all.
Well, Gabriel, we are honored to have you here. Thank you so much for opening up and sharing your personal story.
It's so exciting.
And for making Eric squirm a little bit with that story. Eric, as you listen to that conversation, as we share that conversation, what are some things that stood out for you?
Well, I mean, honestly, this is a big one. This is a really big podcast. Gabriel was very honest. We talk about like this idea, we really want to dissect this no barriers life and how hard the journey is. And there was no BS in this one. I love that. This idea that like sometimes like when you transition from one thing to another, able-bodied to a wheelchair, and then, these things get really out of whack, right? Because maybe you don't process process all the changes and all the feelings of loss. And so these addictions sort of get totally out of whack and start manifesting themselves in really bad, unsustainable ways. I think that is really a fascinating thing. And then how do you then pull yourself out of that? How do you commit to getting back to that life of purpose that maybe you had at 18 years old? I think that's a really important thing for all of us to think about.
Yeah, so true. Yeah, and for me, I was fascinated by so much of the conversation, but one thing that really stood out for me that we see in our community is like this fire that people have inside of them to do something extraordinary. And when Gabriel was talking about how he discovered that, he made that commitment when he was in his 20s that I'm going to do something extraordinary by the time I'm 45. But then there's this whole period of his life that goes completely the other way and completely dark, and anything could have happened in that period, but it's still the thing that fueled him out of it was this, you often call it, Eric, the light inside of him that craved purpose and meaning, knew something extraordinary was within him. And somehow in that moment that he talked about when he was on that drive with his legs stretched out and in this kind of terrible moment, he's like, it has to end here. And I still have that thing inside me. And once he stripped through all the shit that he'd been through, there was still that fire to do that thing that he had dreamed of, and he just needed to bring meaning to it. I think how to help people find that is a passion of mine, because all of us, I think, have it somewhere in us to know that that is there, but how do you discover it and how can you use it to propel you forward is something that fascinates me.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for spending your time listening to this week's podcast. If you enjoyed the conversation, please take a moment and share it with someone that you know. Take a moment and like this podcast. One of the best things you can do to help us is to spread the word about No Barriers. We did mention the No Barriers Summit in this podcast, and if you're interested in joining us at a future summit next year, we'll be in San Francisco, so you can check that out at nobarriersusa.org. Thank you so much.
Thanks, everyone. No barriers.
Thanks to all of you for listening to our podcast. We know that you have a lot of choices about how you can spend your time, and so we appreciate you spending it with us. If you enjoy this podcast, we encourage you to subscribe to it, share it, and give us a review. Show notes can be found at nobarrierspodcast.com. Special thanks to the Dan Ryan Band for our intro song, which is called Guidance. The production team behind this podcast includes producers Diedrich Jonk and Pauline Schaefer, sound design, editing, and mixing by Tyler Kottman, graphics by Sam Davis, and marketing support by Laura Baldwin and Jamie Donnelly. Thanks to all you amazing people for the great work you do.